Strangers and Aliens, Episode 79, Star Trek Feedback.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens. I'm one of your three co-hosts, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and I am joined with the bold and the beautiful. I'll let them decide which one's which.
Can we be the brave and the bold instead of the bold and the beautiful?
No.
I'm the beautiful.
I'll be bold. I'm Ben Avery, the bold.
And I'm Steve McDonald, the beautiful.
Yes. I have met you in person.
Well, were you over?
I think we're stretching the definition of beautiful slightly, but only slightly. So,
well, today you'll be talking and hearing from you all. It's going to be a feedback episode where we get to hear different reflections of what you have said and responded to our past podcasts.
Yes, and this goes back a little bit, but I think that the messages themselves speak for themselves enough that you don't need to actually, you know, go back and re-listen to an episode or anything like that.
But you're free to do so if you'd like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It counts toward our numbers every time you listen to it.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's for punishment. You do it.
So
Steve doesn't do anything else all day. He just sits back and listens to all of our old podcasts.
Trying to pump those numbers out.
That's right. He downloads every episode 20 times. So our advertisers, oh, wait.
Oops.
I knew there's something missing from the equation. We've got the listening. Okay. So, yeah, I think we should just go ahead and get started. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Sure.
All right. Dr. Jace, first one is yours. And
yes.
All right, go for it.
No, I announced last week that we're expecting another baby girl, and so this is response to that. He goes, regarding twins, my wife and I are the parents of twin boys, just a little over a year old, and there is some synergy. All effort exerted seems to be doubled, of course. Now they are playing, and while they do play together, most often it seems to be collaborations and mayhem, which I can imagine. Like 2 months ago, when they overturned our LCD TV while my wife was out of the room for a few moments, awesome. That's when we discovered just how well they could climb. I can relate to that. And they were pushing objects over to use as steps. We replaced the entertainment center with an old office desk of mine that's taller, heavier, deeper, with fewer handholds. Of course, we are thankful they weren't injured. On the upside, I've been losing weight.
So that was from RC. And he doesn't say anything that goes against what I was saying about twins, that I would just be freaking out if I had two the same age. Yeah. So
yeah.
Wanted to share that.
That's cool.
I'll go ahead and read our next one. It's regarding the Man of Steel movie, and it's from Thomas Holstie. And he was referring to that particular episode from the summer movie series. And he said, a terrific, thoughtful discussion that covers a lot of different ideas. Nice job, guys. As for Man of Steel, first, the things I like. Amy Adams is the best Lois Lane ever. Finally, a Lois that isn't fooled by Clark Kent's glasses. For a change, we actually get to see her be the brilliant reporter that she's supposed to be. I choked up in a good way when Diane Lane talked her little boy down from his stress attack in school, and also in the scene where Pa Kent said to Clark, "You are my son." For the most part, the Smallville flashbacks were really good. What I didn't like? the complete lack of thematic follow-through. Everyone in this movie is saying that Clark needs to be a symbol of hope and inspiration. The Kents say it. Jor-El says it. So how could the conflict end on this shades of gray, lesser of two evils note? Were we supposed to be inspired by Superman's agonizing cry of depression? This is an ending fitting for an episode of Torchwood or Battlestar Galactica, not a Superman story. As Ben said, it's just a remake of the other two movies. Can we please get some new films at the multiplex soon? I had been so looking forward to seeing Superman finally hit somebody or something in a movie, but the fight scenes were a gigantic blur of CGI and frantic camera action. I couldn't tell what was going on most of the time. Michael Shannon was way too cartoonish as Zod. The Krypton sequences were frankly boring. Superman movies have gone from way too campy to no sense of humor or fun at all. And he says, as of Man of Steel, so far my roundup of this summer is Iron Man 3 at least had an original plot. Star Trek was a lot of fun, even if it was a remake. And Man of Steel was mostly a big dud. I don't regret seeing it, but I never need to see it again.
Now I have to comment on this one.
Yeah, I have a comment too. So yeah. Go for it, Dr. Jace.
I like Thomas. I think Thomas gives us some very thoughtful feedback. But I have to say, I pretty much disagree with him on almost every point.
Really? The good points?
Well, I'd say, yes. Amy Adams is not even close to the best Lois Lane ever. And the fact that, you know, she's not fooled by Clint Kent's glasses, that's not her bad. That's just the writing and the story. She is, you know, I do agree with the brilliant reporting. But as far as Lois, you have to give the actress and the type more credit for the Lois, and these other things are more writing and story.
Right. For you to say that she was a brilliant reporter, she has to figure it out.
Yeah.
She didn't figure this out. I mean, well, she did the reporting stuff, but it wasn't like, oh, Clark Kent and Superman, I'm going to do brilliant reporting here. Yeah. She saw it.
Yeah. So I very much disagree with that. I do think that it was a smart move to make Lois aware of Clark and Superman, and I think it was a smart move to show that she has a background in reporting, but I don't think Amy Adams is the best Lois Lane ever. I would agree with the Diane Lane. That was a very good moment. You are my son. I would agree with him on that part. I'm going to hold back the complete lack of thematic follow-through because I believe, and I mean, of course, I could be proven wrong, but I think that this is the theme of the next trilogy or this series, not to be answered in one movie. If they answer it in one movie, I think it takes away from Superman's journey. So that's my particular. I don't think it's even remotely close to Superman. If it was Batman taking down a bad guy, we wouldn't be comparing it to Torchwood or Battlestar Galactica. He took a mass murderer and he killed one man to save an entire family. Yes, is it different than other Superman movies? But he's new. This is the first time he's really done this. So it's believable. I think it's a far cry from Torchwood and Battlestar Galactica.
And to that point, Dr. Jace, I think it would be like a Torchwood episode if this was the only story we were getting.
Right, right. Plus, there's a lot more sexual things in Torchwood than in Man of Steel. But as far as the shots, the CGI, the camera work, I thought it was good. I agree that the fight scenes in the city was a little distracting because you're thinking about all the people that are there. Michael Shannon was a very good Zod. The Krypton sequences were awesome.
Yes.
They were interesting. They were new. The only way I think you can be bored is if you are watching a different movie like Iron Man 3 or something. Because, again, Thomas, Iron Man 3, saying that it has an original plot, if you've not seen The Incredibles, please see The Incredibles, and you will know that it is not an original plot. It is a direct ripoff of The Incredibles.
I don't know if it's a direct ripoff, but, yeah, there are a lot of similarities there, as well as, you know, to other films as well. I mean, to say that anything is original at this point, it's going to be really original, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, everything, most of the time, they don't want it to be original. They want it to be an homage to this, and they want it to have, you know, elements of that or whatever.
Familiar.
Yeah.
And I do think that's why they went with this ending for this movie, is that you weren't expecting that to happen because of what happened in all the other ones.
I think they should have saved this ending for the third movie, or maybe the second movie. Well, I don't think giving it away in this one does a lot of stuff for the trilogy.
I think though, but it depends on where the second one. If this gives Superman something to have to deal with, not only
yes.
I mean, there's, you know, this he's going to have to battle that. Hopefully, if they ignore that, then I would agree that that was a really dumb kind of thing to throw in there. But again, if this is Superman's, if he's this is coming out party, he's going to have to learn. And so I like Thomas. Thomas always has good, interesting insight. It just happens that he's completely wrong on this one.
All right. Well, Steve, we got someone else who usually sends us good and interesting insight.
Mike Poteet.
That's one of the members of the Sci-Fi Christian writing crew. So yeah. Would you go ahead and read that one, and we can rip into that now.
All right. I will be reading this in his voice, so as much as I can.
No, don't do that.
Well, I'm just saying I'm not going to try to inject anything into it that I would – I'm not making
right.
commentary
yes.
as I'm going along. So
gotcha.
And if anyone's listening, there you go. regarding Star Trek Into Darkness from Mike Poteet. Hey, guys. Enjoyed your review of STID and thought I'd better send in feedback via email rather than commenting on the blog so as to avoid inadvertently spoiling anyone. Here are my comments.
Spoilers are coming.
Typed as I listened. I do wonder about Enterprise being the only previous production left intact in the new timeline. Since it was, at least in its last season, a direct prequel to TOS, I wonder if there are some things in Enterprise that, from the JJ-verse viewpoint, no longer make sense. I am not familiar enough with Enterprise to know. I did like seeing the Enterprise models, even though it makes little sense for Admiral Marcus to have a model of the Vengeance, I suppose, at the end. The Prime Directive didn't come from Enterprise. It was mentioned on several occasions in TOS, usually when Kirk was getting ready to break it. I felt that this film's Khan was really rather generic, and I'm not talking out of any fan rage here, but simply because a few lines of dialogue can't establish a backstory with enough emotional heft to make an audience care. As with the final act of the film, the Khan revelation traffics too heavily in what has gone before. It only has any impact if you know and care about the Prime Trek universe. Like you, Ben, I feel like the creative team went to such lengths to give themselves a clean slate. Why on earth didn't they take full advantage of this time around? The latter half of this movie feels mostly like fan fiction. Good, well-done fan fiction, I grant you, but fan fiction. Quinto?
Whatever. Just go.
Quinto's Khan yell is ridiculous and cringe-inducing. Likewise, the contact with Prime Spock. How did that conversation between the two Spocks change Quinto's Spock's approach? Show me evidence of this from the movie itself, not your imagined speculations. Shame on Leonard Nimoy for allowing himself to intrude in what should have been solely Quinto Spock's journey. As he said in the beginning of that conversation, if they had to have a stupid Nimoy cameo, at least they should have let Prime Spock keep his integrity. How much more emotionally powerful would it have been if Quinto Spock were calling out to Prime Spock for help, but Prime Spock, for Quinto Spock's own sake, had to say, "I'm sorry, but no, you must do it alone." Ben, I really appreciate your appreciation of iron sharpening iron to the Kirk-Spock relationship in this film. I didn't feel the movie gave us a good sense of their friendship, and I don't think it really does, but I like your take on it, too. Just because paranoid, hawkish Admiral Marcus thinks war with the Klingons is inevitable doesn't mean it's so. Why are you accepting his assessment of the situation as valid? If that were the case, he wouldn't have had to work in secret through Section 31, would he? Everyone is so convinced the third movie will be about war with the Klingons. I wouldn't mind seeing the Klingons again, but come on. Then none of the three films would really involve boldly going where no one has gone before. The, yes, fun and pitch-perfect Nibiru sequence at the beginning of this one. I bet we won't be waiting 4 years after the soft opening of this one.
All right, can I do a Dr. Jace here?
Sure.
I disagree with pretty much everything he says. Going back to Enterprise being the only previous production left intact, it's possible that it's not intact because if you think about it, if people from the future go back in time to the past and change the past, but then someone comes and changes the point where they are in their present so they don't go back into the past again, that does change your past. Does that make any sense?
I bet it does in some time travel-y type of way.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's possible that because Kirk and Spock never went back to like 1968, that they never came in contact with Gary Seven, who was doing his mission to stop, you know, nuclear bombs from, you know, being dropped or whatever. And because they never did that, well, we're looking at the completely different timeline. And okay, so yes, Enterprise could be fiddled with because of the time, but I don't think it is. I think it is.
I think the bigger point is it doesn't matter because Enterprise does not play into this film.
Not specifically, no. Now, he says the Prime Directive didn't come from Enterprise. Yeah, and that's true. It didn't come from Enterprise because the original series was using the Prime Directive as if something that had been established. But in Enterprise, you see it being established. And so that's why it comes from a point of time before the Star Trek movie. So that's why I was saying that the Prime Directive was coming from Enterprise. It was built before the timeline changed. He says this con was rather generic. I don't see how anything with Benedict Cumberbatch is going to be generic, but, you know, okay.
I think, though, the only point is I would say is that I expected more of that character. But I would say, again, like the Superman, my take is that they will explore that character even more because it will establish a stronger rivalry for future movies.
Yes, it does give you a villain with an earlier connection.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I think they could get away with just this movie with him. I think that him wanting to protect his people and then take over the world, that's what he does. I'm fine with that. Okay, the con yell, yeah, we all agree on that. That was ridiculous and goofy and took you way out of the movie. But he says, show me evidence from the movie that the conversation between the two Spocks changed Quinto Spock's approach. And I believe that he just told the Prime Spock, told the new Spock, hey, you need to go after his weakness. Find, you know, what does he want? Well, he wants his people. That's his weakness. I think he gave him the secret to how to stop Khan. Go after his weakness, his one thing. What's the one thing that he got so mad about in Wrath of Khan? His people died. What was he trying to do? Avenge his people. Well, what's he doing in Into Darkness? He's trying to save his people. And everything he does where he seems like he is under Admiral Marcus's control, he's doing it for his own people and then for his, you know, desire to take over the world or whatever. But I that's what I believe that Spock said. Now, my friend Bill, he says that Prime Spock told New Spock, learn to lie. and that's how you defeat him. But no way. Iron sharpening iron. We don't need it. Hawkus Marcus thinks war is inevitable. So why do I think so? Because that's also what the writers think. So, the writing team, they've gone on record saying they'd like to see war with the Klingons.
Yeah.
Being another conflict. And honestly, I think it's going to be something where they go where no one's gone before. They find something that's going to help the war with the Klingons, whether it's some sort of strange weapon or something that's going to cause the Klingons to desire peace or something like that. But I think it's going to tie in the war with exploration. But I might be wrong about that. We'll find out.
Yeah.
The next one is...
4 years.
Yeah. We did an episode about where we thought Star Trek should go after Star Trek Into Darkness, and Mike Petit chimed in on that one as well. This is his comment before he listened to the episode. He says, I thought I'd try posting my answer to your question about where Star Trek should go before listening to the podcast. Then I'll chime in again, probably at length, after listening. From here, I wouldn't mind seeing the franchise return to TV, set in the Abramsverse, but focusing on another starship with new characters, with meaty stories, and even several long story arcs, perhaps leading into, but not tied to, Star Trek III. Let's have regular alien characters that are new from the Abramsverse, like the Lobot or the Golgila monster-headed woman from the Enterprise Bridge, or even that big-eyed doctor from the 2009 film. And let's have a real mandate that we stick to boldly go where no one has gone before. leave the riffs and tweaks of the Prime Universe mythology to the ongoing IDW comics. As for Star Trek III, the general consensus in the blogosphere and podcastverse seems to be that war with the Klingons is inevitable. But just because paranoid, hawkish, wacko Admiral Marcus thinks it is, doesn't mean it's so. I suppose the Klingons could find out that Starfleet personnel transgressed on Kronos in darkness and be reasonably angry about that, but I'd rather not have a war with the Klingons movie. Ho-hum. Having John Harrison and his crew reawaken to wreak havoc also seems like a logical, if predictable, option. A less obvious, but perhaps more original idea might be to revisit Nibiru and see what the fallout from the violation of the Prime Directive is.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then after listening to the episode, he says, well, I guess I should have listened before commenting above. Hopefully I did not ruin too much for anyone. I am unsure why on earth you guys would want to see Next Generation rebooted. Likewise, why do you want to see old stories from any of the series retold? My biggest beef with this new Trek movie is that they went to such lengths in 2009 to give themselves a clean slate. I can't understand this desire I'm hearing from several quarters to see the basic same old ground recovered. If they're going to do something new, do something new. As entertaining as an old material reimagined movie may be, it is also fundamentally a failure of nerve and imagination to do otherwise. Give the current generation of TV or movie audiences, and those of us old-timers who are willing to give the new stuff a fair shake, completely new characters to enjoy, get to know, eventually maybe come to love. Why should any future iterations of the Abrams verse be forever tied and compared to the old stuff? Most illogical. They should do a brand new approach. For example, this would have been cool. And he gives a link to a Star Trek Final Frontier animated series, which I think is the one that takes place like even after Next Generation, and it's on an Enterprise, but it's like a future Enterprise, even more futuristic. So the only reboot idea you guys floated that I really liked was the Gary Seven idea, since it never came to fruition originally. I wonder if it wasn't a Doctor Who inspired idea to begin with, frankly. Whom would you cast in the Gary, Roberta, and Isis roles?
Nice.
I hate casting questions. Otherwise, I'm with Ben. New ship, new crew, new adventures on TV. Then give them a big 2-hour blockbuster as their series finale 7 or so years down the road. No Section 31. Hasn't that done enough damage already? Sheesh. So,
wow.
And he says, I wonder if it wasn't a Doctor Who inspired idea for Gary Seven. And Gary Seven is, he's a person who was taken from Earth in the 60s and then returned back to Earth after being given an education and skill set from aliens who basically send him to Earth to protect humanity from itself. And when the Enterprise crew goes back in time to the 60s, they come in contact with him and try and figure out, is he from the future? Where is he actually an alien? It's a great idea. And it's basically, it is Doctor Who crossed with James Bond.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were inspired by Doctor Who directly. I'm positive they were inspired by James Bond directly, though, with that. So Dr. Jace, he's unsure why on earth you guys want to see a Next Generation reboot. You got anything to say about that?
Yeah, it's the same. Why would you want a Star Trek reboot? They're saying that it's the same material covered, but it's not. It's a reboot. It's familiar characters in completely unfamiliar situations and new actors. So for me, for the people who say that, well, you are so excited for a Star Trek reboot, so why wouldn't you want a Star Trek Next Generation? And for me, Star Trek Next Generation was my Star Trek. So just as you wanted a Star Trek movie seeing Kirk and Scotty, I would love to see Picard and Riker and Data through a new imagination.
There you have it. And I don't know how much Michael was excited about a new Star Trek movie, but I was excited about a new Kirk movie. And yeah, I mean, I'm the one that you're talking about right there in a lot of ways, Dr. Jace. Yeah. So, you know, I can't argue with that logic at all. The other thing I would say is a reboot is the next best thing. You know, it's in between brand new characters and using the same older actors. You're using the same characters but with new actors. So you get a new spin on things, but there's some familiarity to it as well. I understand the reboot desire.
Yeah, plus when you start it from a movie perspective, it changes things. Obviously, when you take the Next Generation from a TV and then you put them in a movie context, they have to build off the TV. But if they do a Next Generation brand new reboot, there's all sorts of imagination that can change things. Can you imagine the holodeck through a movie lens of current technology. There's a lot of different things that would change. And for me, I would love the opportunity to see those characters through a different lens.
All right. Steve, would you like to read it? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, wait. It's Dr. Jace's turn.
It's Jace's, yeah.
This is from Andrew Musser or Mooser. I agree with Michael. I don't see any point in rehashing any era of Trek we've already seen. Maybe I'm becoming a Star Trek Scrooge. Comment on that later. But I'd rather see the franchise go nowhere than head down the path it's going. I just liked what they're doing with the new films almost completely. But even if I thought they were okay, I wouldn't see the point in covering this ground again, even with the new elements they've added. They should have taken a page from Star Trek Online game and set the new films a decade after Nemesis. There is one specific Star Trek story I'd like told, though. It would never happen as a movie, but I'd like to hear about it, about how the Borg became Borg. If whatever race they first developed from decided to do that willingly, or if they were it, or if they were for it or for against it, maybe forming a resistance, too much like Terminator, maybe, and so on. That's actually an interesting idea, and one that I've actually thought about is, you know, seeing a more in-depth Borg become the Borg.
Yeah.
But there is one point here that I would agree with. I want Star Trek back on television.
Mm-hmm.
I think it deserves it, yeah.
I think that there's plenty of room to make a Star Trek, you know, they're doing it with the Avengers, you know, with
the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
I mean, that's where media is going. You're going to movies, you're going to television, you're going to comics, you're going, I mean, these franchises are going to take over everything. So Star Trek's been one of the longest standing franchises. It can hold up movies and a television show.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, you want to read Mike's response to Andrew's response to Mike's comment?
Where Star Trek should go, from Mike Poteet. Andrew, given the surprising, to my mind anyway, number of nods to STTMP
in Star Trek Abrams, the Motion Picture.
Yeah, in both Abrams films thus far, the Admiral uniforms, They Gave Her Back to Me, the possible Delton at helm in Into Darkness, aliens clearly visible in the 1701 crew. Maybe they want to do something with Roddenberry's speculation that the Borg homeworld was the machine planet Voyager 6 encountered. I agree that I would have preferred another leap forward into Star Trek's future, but I would have gone more than a few decades. Say it's the 25th or 26th century, but keep the backstory to a minimum, then fill it in gradually, as the TNG era series did. When TNG premiered, you really needed little to no knowledge of TOS to watch and enjoy. And yet, it was all part of the same canon.
TNG is Next Generation. TOS is the original series.
Yes. Or, frankly, a clean reboot might have been better. I was a big booster of the reboot within the canon option that the 09 film took. But now, Into Darkness shows us how that can be a lazy storytelling out. Unlike you, I am, in my better moments, generally okay with the Abrams films, but I admit they are trying to have it both ways and should really have the guts to do their own thing.
What about this, guys? War with the Klingons is about to happen, and then the Borg come, and so now the Klingons and the Federation have to join together to defeat this enemy that cannot be defeated.
No, I'm not okay with that because the is really Next Generation. I mean, I know that you had it with Voyager as well, but really, the thing that brought home the Borg was Captain Picard. They assimilated him. There is a unique.
Oh, but they could assimilate Kirk.
Yeah, but no. I'm not for that. No.
Right.
My favorite Picard Star Trek storyline is Picard versus the Borg.
And it's quite possibly the best Star Trek storyline ever.
Ever.
Yes.
Yeah, especially after Picard came back and they actually took a time when he went back to Earth. And his relationship with his brother, and it's basically, you know, kind of like how some people I've heard say who've been abused in some way, they could relate to Picard in a way they could never relate to Kirk, because Picard was violated on such an intimate level that how does this strong man come out of that?
Yeah.
How does he go forward? And so anything to do with the Borg that is not Picard-related, I would be very – I mean, I'm okay with it with Voyager because it's already been established, but it was in the same – it was in the same era. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right. Where Star Trek should go from Don Ensign?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I'd be the first to chime in on this. Last Friday, I attended the premiere of The Star Trek Continues at the Phoenix Comic Con. This picks up where the original classic series left off in 1969 and is a live-action web series. The first episode is a What Happened After to the Who Mourns for Adonis. Victor Joseph Vic Mignoga. Mignogna?
Mignogna.
Mignogna? Mjolnir plays Captain Kirk. Positive points. The whole look of this new series is very consistent with the original series. The lights, the sets, lighting, camera angles, color effects, special effects, music, the actor mannerisms, character interactions, ship models are all spot on. Recently, I've been rewatching some of the original first season episodes on Hulu, and it's amazing how close Star Trek Continues gets to the original series. The overall writing, dialogue, plot, and pacing of the episode is very consistent with the episodes of the original series. 3, they brought back Michael Forrest, the actor who played Adonis in the original episode. Forrest did a very credible performance despite his being in his 80s.
Nice.
Problematic issues. Probably the greatest problem here is we can accept the new actors in their roles as Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and so forth. William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, and the others have become TV icons for their characters. The new movie series played it well by having the new Kirk and Spock in an alternate universe. This makes it easier for this diehard Star Trek fans to accept the new actors. However, this is not possible for Star Trek Continues. Having said that, Chris Doohan is the best in capturing his father's role as Scotty. He does a great Scotty. Vic Mjolnir does a credible Kirk. He is actually better looking and more muscular than Shatner. The actor who did Spock is fair, not great. Perhaps the least convincing is the actress, Kim Stinger, who played Uhura. Nichelle Nichols was a very beautiful woman. McCoy, Larry Nemecek, isn't quite right for Kelly's role. Too large, too husky, not enough passion. 2, the other main issue, is there enough interest in the classic franchise to do a continued Voyages to fill out that original 5-year mission?
Yes.
As a kid back in the 1960s, I felt shortchanged that the series didn't at least have a 5-year run to complete those mission adventures. Well, here's our chance to see them over 40 years later, but are there enough of us out there to make this viable financially in 2013. A lot of Star Trek water has gone under the bridge since 1969. Overall, I very much enjoyed Star Trek Continues and wish it every success. You guys may want to do a podcast on this, which is an interesting idea, but I mean, having to watch them.
Well, I'm going to take a page from you and Ben and Dr. Jace's book and negatively turn it on its ear and say, I think I agree with everything in this letter. It's nicely done.
So you were negative by being positive.
Yes.
You became the anti-Ben and Dr. Jace.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Jace, what were you going to say?
This is never going to happen.
Podcast episode?
No. We'll
never do a podcast on Star Trek.
I won't go that far because eventually we'll run out of material. But
never.
Is there enough interest to fill out the last 2 years? No. Only for Star Trek nerds, the most loyal of Star Trek nerds, would they ever go back and fill out 5 years? This is past. It's done. It's over with. And
nope. Well, but that's the
– If I could have everything in the Star Trek universe, of course I'd like 2 more years of the TOS. It's not going to happen.
But that's where this is coming from, is that these are those guys you're talking about who are sitting down and actually making these episodes.
Right. But I'm answering his question. Is there enough? There is not enough interest for this. And if we're laying out all the Star Trek options and you're asking me to choose, this would be like bottom 25 Star Trek options. You know, if I could choose what the next projects would be, there's not enough interest here. Only a very, very small interest for this to happen.
I don't think so. I think it's a labor of love, first of all. These people get paid zero for what they do because of all the legal complications. So just as a labor of love. They have this many people to do it as a labor of love for zero money that they have an actual episode out premiering at the Phoenix Comic Con. So they have that.
But that's the answer to the question, though. Is there enough of us out there to make this a viable financially in 2013? Answer is no. There's not. That's why they're doing – now, they're doing it for free because they have to, because they don't own Star Trek, and Paramount turns a blind eye to fan fiction. And so people are able to do these episodes that are basically mini movies, mm-hmm. and with really good special effects, comparatively speaking. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that they – if they were allowed to make money off of it, I don't think they'd be able to make their production costs.
But I don't think that's necessary. I think that if they set themselves up and they say, we're going to do two series, we're going to do the fourth season and the fifth season, the fourth year and the fifth year out there, and limit it to that, and have people get behind them.
You're answering a different question. You're saying, should they do it or could they do it? The question is it financially viable? And that question is no.
I don't know. If the Star Trek people if they make 5 or 6 episodes, if they make 13 episodes, and the Star Trek people say, you know what, we're going to honor this by throwing them some money and saying that they can actually make some cash or something on this, and giving them a pittance or whatever, I think that it could be done.
They're not. There's no way it's going to. They're making far more money doing movies on the same characters. They're not going to go and finish out two seasons of an old show. If anything, they'll start a new show.
But if someone else has already done it, and they're getting the blessing of fans, they're getting the blessing of people who acted in the original series. The son of someone who acted in the original series plays one of the characters. They're getting people out there that are behind it.
Okay, so I'm looking something up. This might even answer the question. There was a Kickstarter for a series called Star Trek Renegades that Tim Russ and Walter Koenig were doing together, and this was to get costs to do this web series about that takes place after Next Generation. They had a $200,000 goal, and they made, from people pledging, $242,000. So they made their goal. It was successfully funded.
Yeah.
So now this has Robert Picardo involved. This has Tim Russ, Garrett Wang, Ethan Phillips. So there's a lot of named people from the Star Trek universe who are involved as actors on this, but I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe I guess production costs could be made, but it's still going to be a labor of love. Yeah.
But the main Paramount is not going to do it. It financially makes no sense for them to tank a movie franchise to fill out 2 seasons of a show that's already gone by. It all comes down to money.
Yeah.
I don't know. I disagree, but I think we could just disagree and disagree.
And never finish this episode. So who's next for reading?
Who read that one?
You did, Ben, so it's me again.
Yeah, okay.
I think.
Yeah.
All right. Where does Star Trek franchise go from here? Drew Rubb. I just listened to your latest podcast. I thought Dr. Jace was brilliant. Oh, wait, he didn't say that. Here's where I think...
But try again.
Here's where I think the Star Trek franchise should go. Some possible basis for a new TV series. Referenced in both Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, Starfleet Academy Red Squadron. They were supposedly the elite of the elite. Let's see some of their adventures and training at Starfleet Academy. Except rename them from Red Squadron and just keep having the line, this is Red 5, I'm going in, playing through my head from Star Wars, and that's just not right. From Star Trek Enterprise, Military Assault Corp, we could watch some of their exploits either on the Enterprise or not. From various Star Trek series, Starfleet Intelligence, or Section 31, perhaps even roll some of the Military Assault Corps and the Red Squadron into storyline of these two entities. And then since Star Wars and Disney have axed the Star Wars Underworld series, that was planned, let's see Star Trek Underworld. There's so many references to the Orion Syndicate and the several other criminal organizations in the original timeline. Since the new timeline has kind of ditched Roddenberry's utopia future, let's see a series based on the dark underside of this new universe. I think any of these could make for a good plot line for TV series. What are your thoughts? I think that the most viable of these ideas, and my favorite idea, because it would be something that I think could coexist with the new Star Trek universe, and that is with a Starfleet Academy series of some type.
Yeah.
I think that, there's so many stories that could be told. You could have a nice, for a variety of reasons, you could have a young, new cast, plus it's a perfect device to be able to bring back other characters, that either as professors or as reoccurring characters or guest stars.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to – this is actually going to be a different feedback here, because I agree with all of these. These could all be interesting. I don't know how financially viable, you know, when you get into some of these, but I think these all could be very interesting takes on the Star Trek universe.
Which one do you think is the most viable? Which one is out of these ideas would you prefer to see the most? Real quick.
Probably number one, although number four intrigues me. Number four being the Star Trek Underworld, but probably number one being the Starfleet Academy kind of thing. I mean, they already did that. Basically, that's what the first movie was, you know, the 2009 Star Trek. But yeah, I don't. I wouldn't want to see necessarily a Starfleet Intelligence or a Section 31 type of movie.
I'd like to see Section 31 and see how it like octopuses into all this other stuff. And you see how it plays out in the Makos, and you see it plays out in Red Squadron, you see it plays out in an Underworld type of a thing. And you could have like this, you know, multi-layered cast where, you know, each episode you're getting a little bit of this and a little bit of that, sort of like Law and Order, where the first part you have, you know, the law part, and I mean with it, you know, the procedural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part you have the lawyers and doing their stuff, and see how it all interacts with each other. So you could have this flow of characters through the entire episode, see how they interact and everything. I think it could do a really good job with mixing all of this stuff together.
All right. Steve, we got something from Alan Rainey of Flight of the Angels.
All right. Alan Rainey, guys, I thought I'd weigh in with a couple of thoughts on the interesting questions of which actors you would choose to play the principal roles in the Star Trek Next Generation reboot. Aaron and I had an identical conversation right after seeing Into Darkness, as we had a similar degree of difficulty developing spontaneous answers. I was intrigued by Ben's idea to have Donald Glover, Community, play Geordi, but then surprised when you completely shot past Danny Pudi, I don't know if I'm saying that right, also of Community, as a possible Data. How fun would that be? Yes, a little gimmicky. Okay, very gimmicky. But none of this is going to happen in our timeline anyway, so why not dream a little? Speaking of dreaming, it's simply too bad that Kyle Chandler, Friday Night Lights, is on the end of the age bracket. What an interesting Riker he would have made. Throw the man a bone and cast him as an admiral or something in this universe? A truly horrifying thought if there were to develop Jean-Luc Picard's Stargazer years. Who would play Jack Crusher? Yep, Will Wheaton. I need to go to my happy place now for a while. And finally, as Q, get ready. Drum roll, please. Dr. Jace. No. Johnny Depp.
Okay, I will say, I actually would love to have a Jean-Luc Picard Stargazer years.
That could be cool.
That could be really cool.
And Will Wheaton as his father? That.
Well, I don't know about that.
Because the problem is Will Wheaton hasn't changed. You know, he still looks exactly the same as he did. So
he has that facial hair.
If he was at least, you know, looked older, but yeah.
No, I would. That would. I would be really interested in Jean-Luc Picard's Stargazer years.
Yeah, that could be cool. Now, I do need to apologize to Community fans that I shot right past Danny Pudi about being a possible Data. The reason why is I don't know who that is. I'm assuming that this is. The Donald Glover's buddy on Community, but I don't know, and I don't watch Community, so I did like the first I caught about half of the first season, And they weren't even like the first half. It was just like half of the episodes sporadically here and there. Yeah. So
it's like half of each episode.
Yeah, I do need to apologize about that. All right, so our last bit of feedback. This is from Bud Rogers. We were arguing about Sulu in our episode about where Star Trek can go from after Into Darkness. And he weighs in on the Sulu argument. Who's reading this one?
You are.
Oh, that's me. Regarding the popularity of John Cho now and George Takei in the 80s, there's no comparison. John Cho could definitely handle the lead in a movie and bring in the audience these days much more than George Takei could then or now. He's got a wider fan base than is current. George Takei is known for being two things, being Sulu and being gay. Three if you want to count how he plays off one of the other. Spinning Trek off into Sulu solo movie or even a mini franchise would not be a bad move. And I'm assuming he's saying with John Cho as the at the center. I would say George Takei right now is known for a third big thing, and that's being on Facebook. It's like that's where his popularity really is kind of hitting the popular consciousness is that he's on Facebook and people are re-Facebook. Well, it's not retweeting. What do you call it? Sharing on Facebook. People are sharing his stuff.
Well, he was
all
starting to make
over the place.
He was starting to do some stuff when Heroes was a big show. People,
he was on that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good part of that one. So
okay. Anyway, that's our Star Trek feedback then. We have lots more feedback about superheroes and villains and stuff like that. But I think that's going to wrap it up for this feedback episode. We'll talk about the superheroes and villains in another feedback episode in a few weeks. Should we do the Facebook challenge?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do that. That's at the end of the email, guys. Facebook challenge. On Facebook, I put out a challenge for Bible mashups. And I said this, fun challenge time, sci-fi fantasy and Bible mashups. Here's one to get you started. John Carter of Mars Hill. And so the idea is just to take something from the Bible, something from sci-fi and fantasy, mash them together, and what do you get? So I'll start with Thomas Holstein's, and then we'll just go around the circle here.
Why don't I just do the ones that I did, and you do the ones that you did, and then Dr. Jace can do the other ones.
Oh, okay. Well, that would mean Dr. Jace starting with Thomas Holstein there.
Okay, Ewoks versus the Witch of Endor. 1 Samuel 28.
Nice. You even put the Bible reference in that. It's good. I wrote, so long and thanks for the 5 loaves and 2 fishes.
Which is, of course, taking Hitchhiker's Guide, from the Guide to the Galaxy book title. So long and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah.
I put Snow White and the 7 seals. Wrong seals.
Oh, sorry.
And I put the 1 and 2 Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much Steve took all the ones I was going to say. I was about to write them down, and I'm like, oh, he already has them.
Because we have the same mind. Me and Dr. Jace, we think alike so much.
Yeah, because we agree on almost everything.
Almost everything.
It's we have left brain and right brain here at battle.
Yeah, right.
All right.
So, Andrew Musser or Musser? We have to figure that one out.
We'll have to ask him, yeah.
Farmer, Giles of Ham, Shem, and Japheth, Blake, 7 sons of Sceva.
All
right. Yeah.
And then
Farmer
I said
Giles from the J.R.R. Tolkien.
Farmer Giles of Ham. Yeah.
Yeah. Farmer Giles of Ham. And Blake 7, and then the 7 sons of Sceva there.
Blake 7 being a British TV series I want to see. I've only seen the last 5 minutes of it.
Yeah. I think everyone has only seen the last 5 minutes.
All right. Then I chimed in and said Noah's Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Ah.
See? switch there. And I put the Jetsons of Thunder. Of Thunder.
That one was a stretch there.
I liked it though. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, Mickey Kit. This is my favorite one.
Yes, mine too.
Return of the Jedediah. I like that one.
And then 2 more from Andrew, Dr. Jace.
Oh yeah, Andrew has Sermon on the Mount Doom and Nimrod Serling.
Nice. So those were fun.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, that's it for this episode then. And thanks for listening. You have any last words here, guys, about any of the feedback here?
Live long and do something else.
What?
Live long. What is it? Live long and may the force be with you. No,
okay.
Live long and what is it?
Thanks
so long and thanks for all the prospering.
Dr. Right. Jace, you got anything for us?
Yes, please send all your complaints to Steve.
Okay, well, with that said, I'm just going to say Godspeed, everyone.
You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.